This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable. All right, everybody, this is the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, and I've been saying that now for a long time. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, and I don't know, I thought at some point I would just run out of things to talk about 10 years in, but every single year I keep coming back and there's new stories and more stories, whether it's a story or whether it's a tip or a strategy, or if it's, you know, someone's passion that they want to talk about, whether it's public land, whether it's private land, dude, they just keep coming in, and I'm going to keep taking them, from people from all over the country, whether you're down in Florida or you're up in Maine or you're like today's guest from Michigan, dude, Mr. John Milan. Welcome, my friend.
Thank you.
Okay. Northern Michigan, right?
Yes, sir.
Northern Mitten, Michigan.
Yes. Northern Lower.
Northern Southern Michigan.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Commonly referred to.
All right. So right out of the bat, I have to ask you, what are your thoughts on this one buck rule? What are your thoughts on it?
Oh, man. It's a complicated situation. It's very general. I'm a fan of it. I think there's a lot to unpack, and obviously every state has their own stakeholders, right? Everybody right. wants something different. So I was just talking to my buddy on the phone the other day, and I told him, I said, what makes me happy is that everybody's mad about it. Cause then, you know, everybody got a little something of their own. You know, if you made one group happy, the other group's going to be upset. So if everybody's mad, I think you're doing all right as an agency.
If everybody's mad at the change, how are the guys who wanted to implement the one buck rule mad?
Why were they mad?
Yeah. So you're saying before the rule, people were pissed, and then that after the rule, people were pissed.
Yeah, and I think, and just on both sides, like you said, the one buck rule guys, I think, are a little mad because I think they wanted more. I think they wanted, you know, doe management down to very specific DMUs, and which makes sense. But again, you also have to hear from the people who don't want it.
Yeah.
And they don't want any change, you know, so you meet them in the middle. So the one buck rule guys didn't get everything they wanted. The bait guys with the two buck tags didn't get what they wanted. So I think it's personally a good thing that nobody's perfectly happy.
Yeah. The thing that blows my mind the most is the UP seemed to be just left out of the conversation on it, right? The one buck rule is only for the lower part of Michigan, and where it would probably benefit the most would be in the northern part of Michigan, which everybody tells me that, you know, like, dude, the biggest buck I'll ever see in the UP is 100 inches, okay, or smaller than that. I talked to taxidermist. He says if someone shoots 110 inches up here and it's a true UP buck, then that's people are talking about that.
I could agree with that. The UP is just so diverse from one end to the other. So I went to school on the eastern end of the UP, just giant swamp as far as you could see in every direction, it seems like. There's a lot of cover, so deer can live long, but they have a lot of stuff against them. So they have wolves to combat. They have just the hardest winters to combat. They have a pretty heavy hunting culture pressure on them. So the UP should be managed on its own, but I think there's a lot of stakeholder diverse opinions that factor into a lot of that.
Yeah. Is this the deer camp culture that might have an impact on that?
I think so. A lot of old timey guys that just, I mean, you can't blame them. Can't fault them. I love it. I mean, that's what I grew up, just bright eyed, bushy tail looking to, you know, be involved in, because it's just that like nostalgic, that like, I don't know, red flannel, wood stove.
Yep. Get the crew together and mm-hmm. yep, get the crew together and have fun. Right. And ultimately yeah. it's like, how can you hate a guy for wanting to have fun? Right.
You can't.
But at the same time, I don't know. I think you could still have fun by changing some rules and regulations. Right. Because
mm-hmm. I'm a proponent of just change it up. See what happens. You know, I mean, yeah. it's good for a certain term. if it's not going how they had it planned, then go back. You know, it's yeah. not. We're not saying kill every deer and have nothing left. So,
yeah. Would the deer hunting get better or worse? I feel like that should be the number one question. Two things. Will deer hunting get better or worse? And will we be able to include anyone who wants to hunt still? Right? Like, are any of mm-hmm. these rules kicking people out of hunting? Those are the two things that I feel like should be asked when you're getting ready yeah. to change the rules and regulations.
I think that answer changes on who you ask. That deer camp culture versus mm-hmm. a guy 100%. That's just, you know,
yeah,
wanting to put a big set of antlers on as well. And neither of them are wrong, right? It's just a yeah. different perspective of what you want out of it.
Right. And right. Okay.
That's why I think everybody being mad is good.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, cool. Before we get into the rest of this episode, I got to kick it off by saying one thing. We started chatting. I think I sent a message out to the masses saying something along the lines of, hey, if you got a kick-ass deer story, hit me up. And that's why you're here today, is to tell a kick-ass deer story. And but before we get into that, I do have to send a shout out to all of the partners of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. And, these are companies that I've been working with quite a while now. Even like Code Blue Sense, I've been working with them for a while now. And so, if you're looking for like real or synthetic deer urines, if you're looking for scent elimination products like laundry detergents or field sprays or body washes, go check out codebluesense.com. I'm pretty jacked to start getting my mock scrapes up and running here in the next month or so. So if it would stop freaking raining here in Iowa, man, we're getting pounded. We're getting pounded with rain. Rivers are flooding. Creeks are flooding. But anyway, I want to get my mock scrapes out, and I can't do that if it's wet. So codebluesense.com, discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Next on the list is Vortex Optics. Vortex, turkey season's over. If you're looking to prepare for next year or, you know, put a red dot on your sidearm, go check out vortexoptics.com. They have binoculars, rangefinders, spotting scopes, rifle scopes, red dots, you name it, and all the accessories you need, vortexoptics.com. Next on the list would be Wasp Archery. Wasp, dude, I'm telling you, if you guys are looking to switch up your broadheads or you have a bad experience with your current broadhead, go check out Wasp, because most of their heads are still manufactured in the United States by people who actually care about when you screw that tip onto the arrow. I talk with some of those people every single year, and it's just one of those things where it's like, man, like these people care about the outcome of their product. So huge shout out to Wasp for caring. And so mechanicals, fixed blades, you name it, wasparchery.com, discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Next on the list, we've talked about Vortex. We've talked about Code Blue. We've talked about Wasp. Now we got to talk about Reveal trail cameras. These guys are going to be coming out with some really cool shit here in the upcoming months. So keep an eye out for that. But if you're looking for a straight up ease of use, reliable trail camera, go check out all of the Reveal cameras that are available at tacticam.com/cameras. And then they've done some upgrades to their app as well. So if you have the app and haven't updated it, make sure you do that. If you don't have it, go and get it. It's pretty badass with all the functionality that they offer. Last but not least, my company, Full Sneak Gear. Go check out fullsneakgear.com. All right. We're gonna talk about a hunting story that from you today, and it's a non-resident hunt, right? It's a travel hunt. How many years have you been travel hunting, leaving the state, becoming a non-resident, and going out of state to hunt?
So before the story we talked about, this was my fourth trip out of state, and I've been going since I started, like 2019. I messed around a little. I lived out west in Idaho, Wyoming for a bit, and I did, we'd always just buy doe tags, because I mean, I'm sure you know elk tags and buck mule deer tags are always a little bit pricey for a guy that's making minimum wage out there. Yeah. So we'd always get doe tags. So I probably messed around out of state for 8 or 9 years now. I've missed a couple of years because we had some kids, which don't really bode well for going out of state when your kid's born right. The October 1st is the due date. So that one.
I think part of that problem's you, dude. You should have known better.
It does take two to tango, right? I guess planning it. I didn't have my calendar open that day, I guess.
A guy gives a shit anyway, right? At the moment of truth, right? It's right when it's about to happen, you're not going, is this going to affect my hunting seasons for the rest of my life?
Yeah, I'm not opening up a calendar mid baby planning session.
All right. So you've been doing it for a handful of years now. What states in the past have you hunted?
So I've hunted Ohio, Illinois, Kansas, Missouri, Montana, and I never drew an Idaho tag. Nope. So okay. Just those.
Okay. So, but Montana was when you lived out there for a little bit, right?
Yeah. I technically lived North Idaho, but we were right close to Montana. So.
Okay. I gotcha. All right. And so you move back to Michigan, you start going on these non-resident hunts. What are some things that you've kind of learned over the course of the years about leaving Michigan to go hunt in other states?
I mean, just big picture wise, like you just like these deer are so different everywhere you go. Like my experience in Michigan hunting, you know, out of a tree stand, because it's heavy cover, especially up here in northern Michigan, like heavy cover, a lot of tree stands sitting, you're not doing any like anything other than really sitting for deer. Maybe you do some pushes with your friends and stuff. We got out west and like these deer just like they act different. They just, the way they move is different from cover to open ground. Their destination food sources are different. It's just like, it's almost like hunting a different animal. Like you could say you're hunting a whitetail and they're the same creature, but you go two different places. They are just, they might as well be a different animal itself.
Yeah. Dude, I can tell you this. I swear to God that when I went to Michigan, I went in fairly deep one day next to a river. And I was on the upward slope of the first terrain feature that kind of came out of the river. And I swear to God, here's what I think happened. Those deer heard me. I was close enough to them to where they heard me. And then when they decided to come in and come up to this private ag field in between the river and the public that I was on, they came up to this terrain feature that led up to there. They knew exactly where I was at. They were coming in with their heads up in the tree. I'd never seen that before. I was like, people say that, but it's not a joke. They're literally looking for you. Because some old doe has seen it 17, you know, seasons in a row or whatever the case is. And she knows
old does.
Yeah, exactly. And then there was a couple, young bucks with her, but she was looking in the tree. She busted me. She saw something she didn't like. She left. And then out west, when I go to South Dakota, those whitetails, dude, they don't accept anything at all. And so whether it's a truck driving down the road or it's just a little bit of movement, they're gone. So I would say those are the two spookiest deer that I've ever seen. And then here in Iowa, I don't want to say the deer are dumb because they're not, but they are in no way at the level of spookiness that Michigan and the Western deer are.
Yeah. I guess I haven't hunted in Iowa, so I couldn't tell you that. But from Kansas to Michigan, yeah, same thing, man. They just, in my experience, different animals. That's what makes it so much fun, right? You can think you have it so dialed up here in northern Michigan. I just, you know, I go shoot my one buck, 2 bucks a year, and I'm happy. Man, you start to get complacent. Just go 100 miles away. You know, it could be just so different. One state over, two states over.
Yeah. What made you decide to start experiencing deer hunting outside of the state of Michigan?
Really, really peer pressure.
Okay.
My buddies had done it for years before me. So I didn't grow up hunting. So I just like slowly dragged my dad into it and my buddies got me into it. It was kind of that like barrier to entry, you know, where you're like, I don't even know what I don't know, but I knew I wanted to do it. So like just kind of biting off one thing at a time, you know, start hunting here. And then, oh, my buddies go out of state too. I want to go. And then you get going with them and then you're like, oh, this is like vacation, but better yeah. than any beach vacation I've ever had. And I get to go try and kill something and eat it. Yeah. So really, really as bad as it sounds, peer pressure. My buddy's like, oh dude, come with. And
yeah,
I was like, okay.
What was the first out of state hunt you went on?
South Central Ohio.
Okay. All right. And so what did you have a wife and kids at that time?
No.
Okay. So you were, dude, golden. You were
I made two trips that year. We did a season opener and then we went back towards the rut. So,
okay. So you were, that's, dude, that's the best life. Like no one like at home telling you should be home. No one calling you going, hey, the kids shit all over the floor. No one at home. Like, yeah. Like, when are you going to get home on day one of your hunt? Right. And so, yeah, I get it, dude. I feel that's badass. And then, So with that being your first out of state hunt, what was that like?
It was, man, I don't even know how to like, it was like a whole new experience. It was like learning to hunt again, all over again. Like it felt like hunting in like an alien environment, you know, like, you know, that to expect deer, like it's the same, like food, bed, rut, like there's the predictable stuff, but you just like, you feel like you don't know. And every place you walk into, just, you feel like, even though, you know, you see old tree stands and stuff, you're like, oh man, I'm like, this is like a new discovery. You feel like you're just walking into something brand new, like just starting something new, and it feels great. That it was really kind of like a drink through a fire hose where you're like trying to take in like, okay, how do I make moves here? What are these deer on? Like, are they, is that a soybean field? And Like our first Kansas trip, we went out. I'm like, dude, what is that Milo? I've never seen that in my life. You just learn so much.
Yeah. Kind of like information overload. You didn't even 100%. Know how to handle everything that was coming into your brain at that point. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You were just excited to be there.
Oh, yeah. It was like puppy dog. Yeah. Just like 9 weeks old. Just, I mean, skin, you could grab me by my scruff. I was just ready to go.
That's hilarious. All right. So, what did you notice about on that first hunt, the difference between the Michigan deer behavior? And if, I don't know, did you get close enough to deer on that first out of state hunt to like observe deer movement and the differences between it?
Yeah. So I didn't fill a tag, but yeah, seeing these, it was interesting seeing. So where we were hunting, there's a lot more terrain than there is in other parts of Ohio. Like it's like, as you know, like kind of Southern Ohio is real hilly, Northern Ohio is real flat and open ag. Seeing deer move like actual terrain was really cool. Like we have some terrain up here, but like we don't have quite the ag that they have there. So like seeing that stark like ag up to that hillside that shoots right up is like super different than the terrain we have here. We have a lot of what's called drumlins, which are like when the glaciers came through, they just make a whole bunch of like waves essentially. So everything's running like northwestish, but a lot of those are filled with like swampy fingers and forest. Yeah. So like in the flat spots, there's ag. But when we hunted that, it was like ag touching terrain. And it was like your funnels were real tight. Your runways along cover were real tight because there was like just like tight bands of cover really.
Yeah.
Along the edges where whitetails were edge creatures. So that edge was like pretty pounded. It was like reading it really. It was a good place to learn like reading sign because it was so clear. You're like, oh, that's a cow path of a runway. Oh, yeah. that's a scrape line. I can see it all the way down this field edge.
Right. Right. I gotcha. And then, and so you were able to learn a lot about how, like, cause sometimes if my first out of state hunt, let's just say, was to a state where the hunting wasn't as good, right? You made the decision to go to a state like Ohio, which some would say is top five, deer hunting states in the country. Right. And so, Did you have a good enough experience after that, those two trips where you're like, dude, I want to do this a lot? This summer, America turns 250 years old, and there's no better way to celebrate than getting outside and exploring this great nation. One way to do that is to rent a camper or RV from Outdoorsy. Outdoorsy is the most trusted RV rental marketplace in the U.S., making it easy for anyone over 21 to rent an RV or camper without owning one. With Outdoorsy, you can drive it yourself, tow it, or even have it delivered and fully set up at your destination. With comprehensive insurance, 24/7 customer support, and roadside assistance, Outdoorsy gives you the peace of mind you need when on the road. Outdoorsy is even the perfect option for your next out-of-state hunting or fishing trip. Right now, my listeners can have all service fees removed from their bookings in 2026 with code NFC at Outdoorsy.com. That's Outdoorsy.com and use code NFC at checkout to remove your service fees.
100%. 100%. Yeah. Even shooting the deer.
Yeah. So was it because of the deer movement and behavior, or was it just from the experience of hunting a different location?
I would say it's more the experience of hunting the different location. Like, it was just like, I love learning new stuff. So like getting into something new, I was like, oh dude, if this is Ohio, what's Illinois? What's Wisconsin? And then after I did the first one, I realized how attainable it was. Like I said earlier, that barrier to entry, you're like, oh dude, out of state. I don't know anything out of state. Not that I'm older, it was very long ago, but like Onyx and these hunt map apps have just become so much more like easy to use and easily accessible that like back like in when I was in high school, it's like, dude, would you go get like a plat map? Do you use Google Maps? Oh, the green on here is probably public land. You know, it's like that barrier to entry has gotten lower. So like once I realized, oh, dude, this is like easy. And I don't want to say it so everybody now goes out of state and there goes all the tags. Yeah. But like,
you're not the first person to say it, my friend. Yeah, you're definitely not the first person. So
you realize it's not that hard for like what you get out of it. Oh, dude, that was so much fun. I got to go hang out with my buddies for a week and we got to sling arrows at deer. Not me in that case, but like we got to go have fun and, you know, shoot a doe, shoot your buck, whatever. And it was like a week of vacation. Heck yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. And then I get to come home and still hunt more. Like that's phenomenal.
Yeah, dude, I love it. All right. The story, takes place in Kansas, right?
Yes.
Where does the story start for you?
It was 2021. 2020. Sorry, it was 2020. I got married in 2021. So it was 2020 when it happened. It starts in Michigan. It was like a Friday. We'd always leave on a Friday after work, meet up. So I live north of my buddies. We'd travel south. We'd all kind of get together, carpool, and then take off and head through Chicago.
How many of you?
That direction. We do four when we go to Kansas because we do a lot of running gun driving in the morning. Spot and stalk deer. So like two to a vehicle, we've found out works like really good. Cause then you can have a buddy drop you off and then he can go or vice versa. Then you have a spotter or something like that. So we do two to a vehicle. So starts in Michigan, you just get that buzzing, like, oh man, here it comes type of feeling. Head out. We drove through the night, drove all the way through the night. It was like 14 hour drive from altogether. Get out there. So we drove through the dark. You can't see anything when you're driving in the middle of the night, especially in those plain states where there is like no tree cover, anything to bounce anything back to you. You're driving, we get out there. I've never been to Kansas before this trip. So like, I didn't even know what to expect. Sun comes up, we get in. This year particular, we had rented a hotel instead of, we used to do like, we drag my buddy's pop-up camper to like Ohio and these other places. Mm. We've done Airbnbs before, but, we had just got a hotel room because it was just going to be the four of us. Turns out that was a little tight with four dudes hunting equipment in a two-bed motel.
Yep.
We get out there right about sunrise. We were like, all right, like let's throw our stuff in the room. We went and grabbed some groceries from Walmart. So we had some snacks and stuff for the road. And then we got back to the room. We're like, well, I mean, if we're not like deadbeat tired, let's just go out. So we just started going out. The sun was coming up. It was like, I don't know, it was probably about 10 o'clock when we're both trucks are on the road, we're running. Mm-hmm. And that's when you're just drinking it all in. And like, dude, there's like four trees I've seen so far. All of them are private. Like, I don't know what I'm going to do here. Like,
how far into Kansas were you?
Central Kansas. Pretty,
okay, all right.
Pretty dead nuts geographically.
Yep.
So I'm like, this is the information overload we're talking about. Like, dude, there's just like, I'm going to have to ground and pound. I don't know. Like, general knowledge tells me like the bottoms are the cover, up top's the egg, find somewhere in between, sit in a river bottom where they're going to be cruising. Cause this was the first week of November is when we went. That's typically when we head out. So we're just cruising, right? Onyx up on your dashboard on your car, and you're just looking, going from parcel to parcel, doing all the we were just checking all the weehaws, any of the state game areas, stuff like that.
Yep.
And it got to about middle of the day, early middle of the day, like probably 11 or noon. And I told my buddy, I was like, dude, you want to just drop me off in a piece? Like, we've looked at a bunch of pieces, right? We've driven by, and like, it's not really telling. Like, I just want to get out and, just go like walk one, see what's going on. So I was like, should I just go here? He's like, yeah, just get out. So I got out, grabbed my bow. If you imagine a square piece, it's got a river that runs through it right in the middle, like a little, I wouldn't say river, sorry. Like a ditch, an ag ditch.
Yep. Yep.
So I get out, we had it'd be a northwest wind. Sorry, the screen's mirrored and everything, so I'm confusing myself. Northwest wind, so I get out. And I go all the way to the very north edge. So if it is blowing down, I'll like be able to kind of disperse that scent a little bit so I can work that river bottom the other way back towards the road. Cut field, I get all the way over and I brought some antlers to rattle. I was going to rattle and call and just kind of see if we couldn't pull anything out of that river bottom while I'm just like kind of monkeying. First week of November, new state. Why not? You know, we've heard it's pretty effective out there. I'm rattling. It's hot too. It's probably like close to 80 degrees. There's some good cover. I'm rattling. Give it a couple sessions. Nothing. I'm walking. I get to the river makes like a big bend, and I got lazy. I got real lazy, and when I was done rattling, I was like, man, I'm gonna cut through that big bend over to the other like where it comes back around in case there's deer on that other side. And when I got right into that open area, I look across the river on the other side, like the south side of the bend, and there's just it wasn't even like a picket fence look. It was just a giant white blob above this deer's head and just taken off. And I was like, oh, dude, I just blew it. So I
just it was almost like, I don't know, there's a saying in the movie, like one of the Batman movies, where the Joker's like, he's talking about like a puppy dog who's so excited. If he even catches his, like, he doesn't even know what he's going to do when he catches the toy or catches his tail or something like that. And it was almost like you were so excited that all your energy was pushing you forward and your mind wasn't even clicked on yet.
Yes, 100%. 100%. It was full puppy dog.
Yeah.
So then the panic sets in, right? Like, I just saw the biggest buck of my life, I think. Like, I don't even know what, like, I couldn't tell you how many tines it had. I just saw it, like,
giant. The first thing that pops in your head is giant.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, and it was just reflection, beautiful day, but he's with his doe. So they're going across, and I'm like, oh, man, like, I didn't see which way they went. So they're on the other side of this ditch, though, so I got to try and cross. So I'm like, I get down to the ditch, I'm looking back forth, and it's like deep. I'm like, yeah, man, I can't just like, it's not like a puddle I could jump across. Like, it would have been nasty. So I'm like running back forth. I see this log jam. So I'm like crawling over this log jam. At one point I have to just like jump with my bow, and I get to the other side and I'm like crawling up, trying to like sneak and look. And I'm like, man, I just couldn't tell you where they went. So I like rattle and grunt a bunch, like get myself in this nice little cedar bush. And I'm like game planning, right? So I call my buddy. I'm like, dude, what would you do? Like, what should I do? He's like, dude, I don't know. He's like, don't know.
Yeah.
Like, we're new here.
Yeah.
Essentially. So I'm like, all right. So just rattle and grunt, try and pull them out. I'm like looking where I think they might've went back down into the river.
Did he see you then? Did this buck see you? No, did the buck see you?
I don't know. I don't know. And I can explain that further in the story when it comes up.
Okay.
I don't know how well he could see out of his right eye.
Okay.
So I don't know if he saw me or if that doe blew or what, if it was me, if it was someone else, if it was there ended up being a bunch of cows down in there.
Okay.
So I'm like, man, I don't know if they, I would imagine, cause I'm looking both ways and it's just grass, just as far as your eye can see. So I'm like, man, I hope he just pushed her back down in there. So I like I said, did some rattling, grunting. I'm like watching for a bit, just game planning, I don't know, maybe 20, 30 minutes. And on that where that river bend where I was hoping he pushed him back down, I see this tiny little like barely a little forky come up. And I'm like, oh man, it's like, I got to imagine if that big buck was in there, he wouldn't be tolerating that little forky running around. But then I told myself too, I'm like, maybe he's just satellite. Maybe they're further in there. You know, I just don't even know what to expect anymore. But eventually he just worked his way out. He actually worked his way around that riverbend and came up behind me, that little fork buck, and then took off. I was like, oh, great, you know. So I belly crawl across there. I was like, because I was still, you know, hoping dream that he's there. Belly crawl across this field for a while. I get back down into that. Turns out it's an oxbow that's dry. All the leaves in there are the driest leaves I've ever seen in my life. So like, looking at them and they were crunching and I'm like, oh dude, I'm going to get so busted. Like, I don't know what I should do here. So I'm like trying to be super sneaky, staying a little bit higher than I wanted to. And I come around the corner, I have an arrow on. I'm like, just coming around this corner. I look and there's a big old black Angus just staring at me. I'm like, oh, that's not a great sign. So I'm like, man, I think he probably took off. The direction he's going is out into that grass. So he probably just took off, but like not giving up hope entirely. I follow the river and went before it leaves that parcel. It goes pretty much straight to the road and then a 90 and then straight again. And so right at the longer stretch before it goes to the road, I was like, I'll stop one more time. I'll rattle, I'll grunt and see if he's down this one stretch. He should a mature buck that's with a doe, I could imagine he'd at least stand up and just see what's going on.
Yeah.
So I give it one more rattle session, nothing. I was like, okay.
All right. I got a couple questions here.
Yes, sir.
All right. So you see you rattle. Maybe there was a little bit of impatience from you where you drop down and you start like you're going into this dry oxbow or this ditch or whatever it is that you were talking about. And you see a buck running away with a doe, right? And you're like, well, I should go in there deeper. Like, I know you said you didn't know, but initially, did you feel like you were the one that spooked these deer? How far away from you were they from you?
I could probably tell you actually.
Just take a guess. I mean, it's not too terrible.
I mean,
important.
I was probably a couple hundred yards, probably 200 yards away.
All right.
When they first got up, I would assume that's how far they were. But I think I spooked the doe and not him. Cause I didn't, the first time I saw him, they were like in this peninsula of land, they were just dead nuts in the middle running like full tilt. So I was like, oh man, like, and then that's why I had to try to cross this because I couldn't, those giant cottonwoods they have out there, I couldn't see where they were going. I could just see the direction. And then I'm like, try to look through these leaves and get down. I can't see. I just know they're over there now. So I didn't know at what point on that peninsula they were, if he had pushed her back down in there. Cause like I said, it's really the only cover around. It goes just so many miles between these big pieces of cover. Or if he pushed her out into this big giant CRP. So I just was like, if he's out in the CRP, it's close enough to, there's only a little bit left of this public that he's probably on a non-huntable piece if he's over there. So I might as well just kind of like, he would have cleared the area code before he felt comfortable probably laying her back down or she felt comfortable laying back down.
Gotcha. Okay. So your gut was like.
So yeah, a little bit of impatience.
Not like a full spook though, like. I am 100% of the reason that this buck is up and these deer are running away.
Yeah, correct.
Okay,
like I said, I didn't know if it was me, if it was maybe that little forky in there that was pestering him and she got up and then he, you know, those bucks just get so on their tails that when they're just so hot.
They just
like
get
that.
Amped up and start chasing her. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't know if she spooked, if the cows came through. And at that point, I didn't even know the cows were in there. because they were all down in the river bottom, just I'm sure drinking and just staying in the shade.
Okay. So you saw them run in a direction. You started following them. There's a sea of grass. You're still on public or walk-in, whatever.
Yeah, walk-in.
And you're guessing, like, if they keep running at this angle, they're going to be going that direction. And so you're following this like dry creek bed or whatever. Is that right?
Yeah. So at that point, I went into that oxbow and then it came back to the river where there was water. So it was back to that lush green stuff.
Yep. Okay. And at this point, this is where you're saying, man, you know, has enough time gone by to where you feel like they might be bedded back down?
Yeah. At this point, it was probably
to get them to stand up.
It was probably almost an hour, maybe a little bit more, since I first kicked them up, or since they first got up, I should say.
Yep.
So it's probably at least an hour, if not a little bit more, because I sat in that cedar bush. I was like, man, what do I do? Like, I just need time to think here. Like,
and this is day one, right?
This is 2.5 hours into a 9-day trip is when I see this buck. I'm like, crazy. Oh my.
Okay.
Like, this is going to be good. Like,
yeah.
My brain, like, so not only am I trying to figure out what should I do with this buck right here, but I'm like, gee, I got 9 days of this. This is like a kid in a candy store. This is like dreamland. I might never come back. I just met this girl that I want to marry, but she might have to find someone else because I might just live here. Like, this is awesome. So yeah, 2.5 hours in, and then right where I left off was that, like, right where that last rattle session, right where it gets straight. I was like, this is it. There's only a couple hundred yards to the road, probably 400 yards to the road from where I was standing. I was like, I'll give it one more rattle session. Like, just, you know, a hope and a prayer. We'll see what happens. I rattle nothing. I'm like, all right, you know, find a pack it up. We gave it a good effort. He must be gone into that CRP, the absolute BFE of CRP that just extends out. So I pack my antlers on the bag. I have a vinyl harness. I re-knock my arrow, get my whole setup tore down, and I just tuck my grunt call right in my, like, in between my chest and my vinyl harness. Mm-hmm. And I call my buddy. I said, hey, you know, I can't find him. I'm heading towards the road if you want to head back this way. He's like, all right, I'm about like 20, 25 minutes out. Okay. So I start walking that straight along towards the road. And I get probably 40 yards from where I'm walking. I'm like, man, I should just knock an arrow. Like, should just probably knock an arrow just in case. I stop, knock an arrow. And as soon as I knock an arrow, maybe 12 yards away, the doe explodes out of this grass. Like, so it was like a cut. I think it was Milo at that point. It was cut. And then it was like just that shrubby edge and then down into the river in that shrubby stuff that's like chest high. It seems like she just blows up and just flies out into that CRP. And I, like, it scared me. Like, I thought I was in danger. I'd like drop to the ground. I'm like fumbling around. I grab, I don't know. I don't, this is pure panic mode. I don't know. I grabbed my grunt because he popped up too at that point. But I didn't see which way he went. I just saw the doe. So I like grabbed my grunt call, like freaking out. I'd like absolutely hammer on it like a duck call. Like, I'm surprised a mallard or two didn't come in because I was just like blown it. I'm like, what am I doing? Like, what? Like, this is not the right answer. I don't know what the answer is right now, but this is not the right answer, is to blow into my grunt call like a duck call because I'm panicking because I just saw this giant buck at like 10 yards. Yeah. It come out of the grass. So I'm like, whatever, I gotta find them, right? So I throw the grunt call back in and I just start taking off down that river. So now we're like, now I'm parallel in that river. I'm like looking in where I can through, there's holes in the trees, and every so often I'd see him like come up and then like we'd see each other and then he'd go back down, but I could see he was still like going the direction. So we're like paralleling each other, running, like, I, in my mind, I like to imagine that we're running next to each other, like it's a foot race. But he was beating me head and shoulders for sure.
Right.
We get up to that 90-degree bend. I can see it coming up, and I'm like, all right, like, I don't see him cross it yet. And I get to that 90, and it like dives down a little bit. There's a little flat, and so I run down onto that flat. And right at that point, he's in that ditch in the water, like swimming across because it's like super deep. So he's like not quite swimming, but like just kind of stuck in the mud type of deal. Mm. I can see that there's a runway straight across from me that like, that's where he's going to go. There's no other option. Runway, giant cottonwood tree, probably like one of those 3-footers.
Right.
And the runway loops right behind it and then goes up into the field and we could take off. So I had that arrow knocked.
So this deer is in a river swimming away from you.
Yeah. And this, at this point, he was only probably 16 to 18 yards. Like, I felt like I was like in, we were together.
So it was almost like you could have jumped in the river and drowned him. Like you could have hopped on top of him.
Yeah. I wouldn't have wanted to. He was a giant. Like,
this is bananas.
Probably over 300 pounds. Like he was just a big Kansas, central Kansas, just brain machine.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Okay. So he's on inside 20 yard. Did you have the thought like maybe I can shoot him while he's swimming?
No, I didn't have any thought at all at that point.
Like you're just blackout.
I think I was just like only function, like only like what do I do next? Like what's going on? Is this real? Like this is coming from Northern Michigan. This is the absolute opposite of anything I ever expected. Yeah. So I'm like, okay. Like I see the runway. He's like starts getting up. Like he's going up that one. I'm like, okay. So I have my bow and I draw back. And right where I'm like seeing that runway go behind that cottonwood, there's a nasty little branch sticking out. One branch in this whole area that's sticking out right by that runway. So I have to like get down on my knees. So I'm like doing like a Richard Simmons squat where I'm all stretched out.
Yep.
And I draw back and I'm just waiting because right now he's like totally 100% facing away from me going straight up. So like just not a shot I really want to take at a
right.
moving
How far?
Deer. That was, I didn't range it then, but I ranged it after. It was like 22 yards where that cottonwood was from where I was standing.
Yeah.
So it was like danger close.
Yeah.
So I draw back and I'm just waiting for him to come around that cottonwood because he's like running and he just comes to turn. And I don't remember now if I even like, man, yeah, like I didn't even stop him or anything. He just came around that cottonwood. And this is where I think I was talking about his right eye. I didn't know this till after. I don't think he could see well out of his right eye. So when he got around that cottonwood, he had to turn his whole body to see me out of his left eye. So he stopped because he couldn't see any threat coming from that direction when he's coming up and then turns. I'm on his right side. He can't see it. So he doesn't even know if I'm there. So he has to turn his head totally to the left to get his left eye to see me. And at that point, he turned himself totally broadside and I sent it. And it felt like a really good shot. But like when he turned, it was like perfect, like perfect shoulder pocket. Cause like when I let that arrow go, he like lifted to go up the hill more and it just looked perfect. I was like, dude, that was just like a right where you want it. Like that's great. And I just see him absolutely blow out of it. And at that point we were 60 yards from the road where that runway came up. There's a little section of like part of the field, like a little peninsula, like cut Milo or whatever it was in there.
Yeah.
And then it went right to the like where you park for it to be walk in, like a field access.
Yeah.
And he just blew right through that. It like I didn't see him at that point go right through that, but I saw him, he got a good hit and he just took off. And I'm like, oh my gosh, dude, what did I just do? Well, I'm like walking in circles, think like breathing. I call my buddy that's on his way and I was like, dude, Nick, I just shot a giant. He's like, no, you didn't. I said, yeah, dude, I think I just shot a giant. And he's like, no way, no way. And he just hangs up the phone. I'm like, okay. So now he thinks I'm messing with him or something. So I walk out to the road and he's still a couple minutes away. And I'm like looking for blood. I find my arrow, find blood. It's about probably halfway covered in blood. So I was like, oh, like good penetration, but it's kind of that blood where you can't really tell like if it's totally smeared or if it's kind of like blown down the arrow. Like it was super dry, like just so dry out there. So everything dries right away. So you can't really like tell what's what. And then all that I was shooting a black arrow at that point. So it was like really kind of hard to tell when it dried up on there. So we're following like these specks of blood and I follow it right up to that parking area. And then I'm just like, at that point, I know he goes across the road, which is onto private, which is not, we didn't have permission.
Not ideal.
So showed up 2 hours earlier.
Yeah.
And so I'm just waiting there. I'm like, dude, like what is this? Feels like the twilight zone. Like, I didn't even know what to think about this. My buddy pulls up and parks, and he leans out the truck. He's like, did you actually shoot a big one? I said, yeah, dude. He's like, well, where's the blood? I said, you literally just parked on it. Like, he pulled up and parked on the blood trail because it went right through that little
parking area,
parking section. So then the next thing is, like, I figured out, like, obviously he goes across the road. Now we got to get permission, right? And I'm like, oh, man, like, what am I supposed to do here? Like, obviously we have Onyx, so, like, we'll find that landowner and you got to go through the trust. Or it's in a trust or something. So you got to, like, figure out who's really the authoritative body there, right? Because a lot of times you get some, like, mystery number that, you know, it's some, you never get to the person.
Right.
Ending up finding that lady, and this is, now it's getting into the afternoon, so, like, we're like, oh man, we're gonna like, I don't want to
So wait a second. Yeah. You followed blood across the road into the next property, the private property, and that's when you said, we got to stop, we got to find the landowner.
Yeah, so I only followed it across the road and then just right into their field access. So I, like, didn't even go into, it was a big hay field. Didn't even, like, go into the field, but I could see the specks going up. And it was, like, small specks. So, like, then I'm getting a little worried. I'm like, man, if I shot him where I thought I did, he should be, like, blowing blood. Like, I would figure bottom of lungs or something.
And no pass through, so there's only one hole, right?
Yeah.
Were you shooting up? Like, were you shooting up at him?
Yeah.
Okay.
So what ended up happening is I went in, which we found out after we found him. I had gone in just above his sternum and went into, like, the backside shoulder. So when he ran those first couple of bounds, it just absolutely tore everything up inside of him. But those bucks have all that fat and that heavy hair and everything that there was not a whole lot of blood to be pouring back out of there from the entry, and then the arrow wiggling this way and cutting all that up. It only had one little hole to come out of through that fat, through that skin, through that heavy guard hair that they have there.
And so then what happens is, let me see here, the skin will come up, there's the hole, especially if he's going uphill, and then when he's standing flat, that covers it up. I had a same thing happen to me in 2012, was it 12? No, it would have been 2009. Or I double lunged a buck who had both his legs forward, but then when he started to run, that hair came forward or came back, or skin came back over the wound, and there was no blood. And so, and then I had to go into CRP and grid search it, and we ended up finding him. But okay, so talk to me a little bit about, okay, so your buddy's like, bullshit. You follow the blood, and how long did it take you to get access to that property?
So it took us, we went that evening. So it was like just getting, just before, like, when you'd want to be out there, like, hunting more. So I went with my buddy, and I didn't think about this at the time, but, like, maybe I should have approached it different, but found the lady's address, show up, but, like, I still have my chest harness on. I'm in, like, fatigue colors, right? I'm in, like, these browns and greens, and, like, I have, like, obviously my vinyl harness on. I'm, like, knocking on this lady's door, and I can see her. She, like, peeks through the curtains, like, farther over. I can see her, like, peeking through. She's on the phone, like, she's on her landline. So I don't know, like, to this day, I don't know if she'd call 911 because now she's freaking out because there's two dudes there standing with, like, looks like, you know, what she would imagine, like, probably police gear or something.
SWAT vinyl team type stuff.
Yeah, pounding on her door. And she, like, answers the door, but leaves the glass door shut. And she's like peeking through, can I help you? And I was like, yeah, just, my name's John. I shot a deer on some public ground, and it's next to some ground that you own. I was wondering if you would give me permission to go retrieve that deer. She's like, you don't want to hunt on it. I said, no. I shot a deer and it went over there. I would just like to retrieve my deer so it doesn't go to waste. And, she's like, yeah, okay. And just shuts the door. And I was like, I mean, I guess that's about as much permission as I'm going to get. Like,
that's a yes.
I'm not going to get anything signed or anything from her. She does not want to talk any longer than tell me to go. So we get back there. My buddy takes off because I was like, dude, just go hunt. Like, right now, it's not the biggest deal. Like, I can just try and track while you go hunt. Like, I don't want to take an evening from you right now. Yeah. It was the first day, so it's not that big of a deal, but didn't want to. So he takes off and I'm following, and it's a cut hay field in Kansas in November. So it's just dry. Everything's yellow. And then the sun is now like right at that, like 40 minutes from dark by the time I'm tracking
shadows
through.
So everything's all
yellow.
Over. Yeah.
Shadows, everything's yellow. And I'm looking for these pinpricks. I'm like, dude, I cannot find, like, I can get 25, 30 yards and it's just dead nuts through this hayfield. So I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to, like, I'm just going to back out. I'm going to stop stepping on blood. Maybe, you know, if I get out of here, maybe we can call a dog if I need to. Cause like tracking this is like no other tracking I've done before. The super dry, halfway dirt, halfway like that, just that sandy dirt that you don't like to track on that blood just disappears into. So wait till dark. We get all of our buddies down there and we start going. And at this point, my buddy Keegan's there. He's a bloodhound. I'll give him that. He's an absolute bloodhound. And we're tracking. We got our lights up. And like this is one of the things that when you asked earlier what the difference is, we're like shining up and making sure this deer's not out in the field. We're watching does just like come out of one piece of cover into another. We look up at one point. There's a nice buck, not the buck that I shot, but a nice buck just across the field, probably 150 yards, just making a scrape. Field edge making a scrape. And there's four dudes walking towards them with lights. Like, I could never imagine being here at home and watching a buck make a scrape at night, just totally unbothered, just makes a scrape, heads back into the cover, takes off for the night. We're like, all right, okay, guess that's what they do here. So we follow that blood, get to the first piece of like where it turns back into cover. So like a lower part of the field, not wet, but a lower part of the field. And there's like a big bloody bed. I'm like, oh man, like that's so really weird. Now,
were you following blood to that bed, or was this like okay, all right?
So it was pinpricks.
So you were on
so
a like, legit blood trail.
Yeah. So it must have been like he must have just been blowing enough out of his nose because it was just those tiny little pricks. Like you get a couple here and a couple there and a couple, you know, and you maybe go 10, 5, 10, 20 yards. So he must have just been on a full sprint that whole way. It never slowed down until he got back into that cover. But then he laid down, got up 10 more yards, laid down again. And at that point, we're like, man, if there's two bloody beds, I don't know if he's like, now I like lost all confidence in like, I thought I shot him right in his armpit pocket. It should be a dead deer. So I'm like, man, you know, we all decided, let's just back out. Like, let's not push him. If maybe we kicked him out of those beds when we started tracking, we saw that buck that was making a scrape, you know. Not that that was him, but like maybe he got up at that same time and moved. So that night I'm just like killing myself over this. Like, oh man, this is the biggest buck of my life. I'm gonna like, and I'm going to lose it. This is ridiculous. I'm like, maybe I'm like looking up dogs. Like maybe I'll get a dog if anybody can get out here. I don't know, remember if I called any or not. But like, let's go back in the morning. So the guys hunt in the morning and then circle back to that piece. I was probably 10 o'clock in the morning and there's two dudes coming out, or a guy and his son. I'm like, oh, holy smokes. Like, I didn't even realize that this was, you know, like I didn't realize somebody hunted it. So we talked to him and the guy's like, I told him the story. He's like, oh, okay. You know, whatever. Like they lease it. So, he wasn't like upset or anything, which was nice, you know? But I told him, I said, we tracked it over this way and then it got back, came back out of that ditch and headed right towards like, there's this big spot of what I call canola. Like, this is just what it looks like. It's just big, brushy, thin stuff. So I was like, it looks like he's headed that way, but we're not sure. He's like, oh, we just hunted over that this morning. And I think two does came out of there, something where I was like, oh, great. Like, not a great sign, you know, like if he's in there, you'd think you'd see coyotes or ravens or anything, you know, something picking at him. So we talked to him for a bit. They take off. I said, we're just going to track, you know, and then get out of here. We'll be gone. We'll be gone. And, you know, probably not that long. Cause he's either going to be there. Or he's not. So we kind of pull up and the way the wind was blowing, I had my buddies go sit on like just watching the backside of that cover. So like, if he did blow out, we could at least know, hey, he's still alive. He's gone. Like he's obviously, if he hasn't died in the last 18 hours, he's probably not going to, because it wasn't like a gut shot or anything. So it's not like one of those long.
Did you at this point, did you think your shot was too forward in the, like the no man's land?
I thought it was too low at this point. Man, maybe I hit, because it was definitely behind his shoulder. So like I knew it wasn't like brisket where you get that like muscly blood and a whole lot of like, so I knew it was behind his shoulder. So I thought maybe I came in and scraped on the bottom side of his sternum and cut him up that way. And maybe that's that. I was like, man, I just like, I wasn't sure at that point. I was like, he should be dead.
Mm-hmm.
So then you just get in your own mind and you're like right. playing it back over. Like, was my shot where I thought it was? Mm-hmm. Did he really run like he did? You know, you start playing all those scenarios in your head and just second guessing yourself. So we start tracking towards that canola. Well, stuff I'm calling canola. And we're back on that little, like, kind of little bit of blood.
But it's consistent, right? So, like, this whole time you're following little drops of blood. So mm-hmm. he's bleeding and he has continued to bleed this whole mm-hmm. time, which is a good sign, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, that's again, that roller coaster. Like, man, I like good, but also why? Like, why isn't he dead right here? So we get up to that patch in about 10 yards, probably to that. We just can't find anything. You're like, okay, like he either went straight, he went right, or he went left around it. So that my buddy Keegan, I was talking about the bloodhound. He's like, I'm going to keep going straight because that's where this line's going. He said, just go right and take the first runway in. And my other buddy, go left, take that first runway in. And we'll just like kind of see what we have. If there's any blood up on this tall stuff, maybe he wiped something or, it, you know, when he's running over it, it goes under his armpit and can wipe some, you know. So we walk up to it. My buddy Keegan goes in. I make a right. I just about turn onto that first runway. My buddy Keegan goes, I got him. So we just run over there. And every single one of my buddies is like, you didn't shoot this buck. Like, this is the one you shot. I'm like, yeah, this is him. Like, no, you didn't. I'm like, dude, yes. So we drag him out, absolutely covered in ticks and flies and everything because it was so warm out. But he had succumbed the night before because the coyotes had chewed his back half pretty good. But even with that, it still took the three of us to get him up on the hitch packer of the truck.
Now, wait a second.
Like,
no, you can't skip through this part because – yes, the coyotes got to him. How far from where you shot him to where you found him? How far did he go?
I've done this before. Let me measure it out.
2 miles?
No. 700 yards. 800 yards.
Okay. All right. So that's not too terribly bad.
No.
Okay. But you were like all the way to when this buck is swimming the river and you're like, holy shit, this deer is huge. Your buddy goes, I got him. You're running through this grass to get to him. And when you see him for the first time, was he as big as you thought he was?
Bigger.
Okay. Dude.
Yeah. Cause that was the first
time. You gotta say shit like that because, you know, you're like, oh, well, yeah. And then we started dragging him out. I'm like, wait a second. The whole story is like, this was a giant buck, a big bodied, big antlered deer. And so when you kind of came, like when the grass kind of parted and you walked up to him, like what was the first thoughts that were going through your head when you got to see how big he actually was?
Quite a few expletives for sure. Holy, it was my first like, and maybe it was my buddy planting that like seed of doubt, but when he was like, is this the deer you shot? My brain for a second was like, what if it's not? Like, what if this is someone else's? Like, I mean, this is a stud. Do I just throw my tag on it and then just like think it's mine? But all of us were like, dude, no, none of us had shot at this point any deer that was like close to this caliber. My buddies have shot some really nice ones, Ohio. I shot a nice one in Illinois. Some nice bucks, like 140s for sure.
Yeah.
But this deer was just beyond that. Like you could just look at it and know he's beyond it. And the part I left out earlier that we discussed before is when I was talking on the phone with my buddies and I told him I shot a giant. He's like, how big? I said, dude, if it's not 140, I'll cut my blank off and eat it. I was like so confident that I knew this was a giant. I knew this was going to be big. But when, like you said, when you got up to him, there is zero ground shrinkage. It was just, it probably helped that he just had so much mass. Like this deer just carried everything in his mass. So like when you get up and you see mass, like tangibly, You're like, oh my gosh, like that's incredible. Like there's no ground shrink. It's just like you pull that other, like when you lift that antler for the first time and the other one's buried in the grass and it comes out, now there's like two and you're like, oh, like, oh, the one antler was big laying on his side, but you pull the other one up and now you got two. It's like, oh my.
Yeah.
Zero ground shrinkage, which was amazing.
Okay. So you went and you put your hands on them for the first time. You're happy. Now it's to the point in the story where you're just like, okay, how big do you haven't measured him yet, but how big was this buck?
How big did we end up scoring him?
No, how big did you think he was? Like 140s, 150s, 160s?
I thought he was at least like 160, 155 to 160 is what I was like. I like to, like, when I look at a buck, I'm like, okay, that's what I think it is. I'll just take a couple inches off, you know, like, because maybe I'm a little hopeful sometimes and I'd rather be under than like over, and every deer's 200 inches. You know, everybody knows a guy that's like, oh, I had a 200 incher on camera this year. It's like, eh, did ya? So I was pretty confident that he was somewhere in there, but we just didn't know at that point.
Yeah.
So we dragged him out and we were able to, it was beautiful. We were able to drive through the field because it was a nice cut, dry hay field.
Mm-hmm.
Get him on the hitchback, obviously take a whole bunch of pictures because we were like, holy, you know, this is incredible. I was like fighting, like, dude, this is like overwhelming emotionally, like to go through all that, like biggest year of my life, shot him, or biggest year, lost him, bumped him, ran alongside the river with him, shot him, lost him, you know, bloody bed, you know, your emotions are all over the place. And you find him and you're like, holy smoke, this is like something that like happened. Like I did it, you know,
right?
It's very like relieving.
Right. Right. Okay. So you're happy, right? This is you find him on day two of this hunt. My first question is, because the coyotes got to him, did you happen to salvage any of the meat?
Yeah. So we took back straps and fronts.
Okay.
They didn't get in his back straps and his front shoulders were okay. It was really he was laying on his left side. So his top right was totally gone. And then they had chewed just the little back part of his left. But I wasn't super comfortable with eating that one that was chewed on, but there was still some left. So I just took everything off the front.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. All right. So, that you didn't measure him until you got back home, but how did the rest of the hunt go for your buddies?
Oh, it was, I mean, four kids in a candy store for sure. So skull cap him, obviously can't bring that back. Caped him because I knew it was going to go on the wall.
Mm.
So caped him, which learned a valuable lesson that if you're out of state and you want to save a cape, make sure it gets cold all the way through. I had some slippage up in the front that we folded it up, put it in a garbage bag, and then put it in the hotel like mini fridge for that night just to get it cold. And then the next day we went, got it in the freezer at behind the front desk, which we didn't tell them what it was, but we're like, oh, this needs to be frozen. valuable lesson learned because I wanted to keep his cape because he had a 20, I can't remember now, it was 25 and a half inch neck, something like that. So he was just like, suit like linebacker, it's a roided out linebacker neck. But then it was like, that was like great to start. So everybody's just like buzzing for the next 9 days, right? Like, oh, there's, you know, this is a possibility to like shoot something like this. So two out of the next three dudes all ended up shooting on that trip and, all really nice deer for sure. And then with Kansas, they give you your doe tag too. So that was nice. So I never ended up filling it, but it was nice to like go out and still be able to hunt. I mostly sat with my buddies. Like in the evenings, I'd sit with buddies. So we had another set of eyes glass in, or like if someone wanted to do a stalk, I was eyes. So like, oh, dude, you boogered him when you were on the other side of the hill and he's gone. So like, just stop wasting your time.
Yeah. Okay. Dude. So long story short, just an amazing hunt, right? Like you show up and it is everything you were dreaming about. The big bucks all over the place, the rut. Were the numbers there? Cause you know, in the story, when I went to Kansas, I was told right all the way, do not expect to see a ton of deer. And I did not, right? My Kansas trip was smaller, like not smaller bucks, but like just way less deer than Iowa or any other Midwestern place that I've hunted. And did you see that same thing?
Yeah. I'll say, you know, we saw more bucks than I would here.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because like that morning drive, like, so we'd start off in the dark to get to like a good cluster, and then we'd wait for the sun to rise, and then we'd just start taking off, driving around all those pieces and maybe hit another one again. So like you'd see, we probably saw more bucks because it was just visually you had more ground to cover than you would here. So we saw probably more bucks, but like generally, like I saw a tenth of the does that you'd see here. I mean, we just have does out the wazoo. So it's like, we have a crazy imbalance. I think they have a lot better of a herd balance there. So we would see less does, but that would just made those buck flurries so much better, because you'd see four or five bucks and, you know, four of them are probably 110 inches, but you'd see like a nice one with them, or like you just see the little, like it was a lot more activity, but I think that was just based on visually. But I think there was less, because I mean, we'd go for miles and you wouldn't see a deer.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you'd get into a couple of them.
Yeah. Okay. Cool, man. All right. So outside of that, great, you know, absolutely great, great hunt, fun hunt. When you got home and you put tape to him, what did he score?
We scored him at 173. He's kind of goofy though, because he has,
oh man, he was 155. Man, I take a couple inches off. Either.
I'm not good at it. I never said I was good at it. I'm just an estimation.
Dude, so a hammer.
Yeah. So he's got some like cool, like shared base. What did they call shared base points? So like he's that fine line of like typical, non-typical.
Gotcha.
So I actually, the next year, I ended up shooting one in Michigan that I was like, that was super wonky. Just had stuff everywhere, basket size, but just stuff everywhere. So I was like, I have $2. I might as well see if someone will come measure up. So when I lived in a different town with my wife when we first got married, there was a guy that wasn't far. So I was talking with him. He's like, yeah, glad to come by. And much to my wife's chagrin, we ended up talking for like 4 or 5 hours one night. Yeah. And we're just sitting there talking about deer. My wife's just sitting in the living room like, these guys are just such losers.
Dumbasses, yeah.
Just talking about deer and deer hunting for hours. She's like, I thought he was going to come over, measure some deer, and leave. I said, no, I mean, we ended up talking. So, but when they scored, he scored them both typical and non-typical. And his gross was 166 or something like that.
Yeah.
His book measurement is 160, because they like send it in and then they have them like review it by other scorers. So like, especially those like weird shared base. So he had like his rule book out. He's like, you could go both ways. So they end up sending it to like someone else and be like, well, what do you think? And so they monkeyed with like the shared base point. So he's 166 and something, which is 166 inches of happiness for me. You could be 120, you know?
Dude, that's number one, just an amazing trip with buds. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, a giant 170-inch whitetail. I don't give a shit about gross scores. And then just the straight up, you know, that was 6 years ago and you're still telling the story to me like it happened yesterday. Right. You know what I mean? It had an impact, dude.
Yeah. And that was, I want to say that's the first buck I shot out of state. So I've been on multiple trips, but like when you got a state, you're a little bit pickier. You're like, I'm not filling the freezer here necessarily. I don't want to haul back a whole bunch of meat just to shoot a basket in Ohio or Illinois or something, you know, like I'm here. I spent the money to shoot a big one. So like, it's not like necessarily worth it just to go shoot a basket there. In terms of like, if I can make another trip back, I might as well hold my tag, bite my tongue type of thing. If you eat tag soup out of state, for me, it's a little different than eating tag soup here. So,
absolutely.
But yeah, it's something I will never forget, especially being like the first buck that I shot out of state. And so it's like that, you know, you see the youth hunters go out and the 6-year-old kid shoots the 185 and you're like, dude, why would you start there? You're never going to, you might as well quit. I told my buddies at the end of that trip, I was like, so is this my last trip? Like, I might as well quit, right? Like, there's no sense in going back out. This is a deer of a lifetime. I might as well save the money and pick up golf or chess or something.
Right, Right. Dude, that's awesome. Well, dude, congratulations on one heck of a story, man.
Thanks.
You know, great deer. I haven't even seen a picture of it yet, by the way. So you're going to have to send me an email picture of it. But congratulations on a great trip. Good luck this upcoming season, man. And I hope you lay down another booner this year, man.
We actually drew Kansas again this year. So three-peat? No, I'm just kidding.
Kansas is a mysterious place, right? It could be dead or it can be on fire, you know? And and it just takes one buck to walk by, dude. That's all it takes.
It takes one doe and you're just in it.
In it. All right. My man, hey, have a good one. Thanks for your time. We'll talk to you later.
You as well.